at Shattering Myths, we're taking a survey of violent uprisings around the world. We're currently in Lebanon in our tour. This article reads that the radical Lebanese group, they aren't radical, they're fundamentalist, and they are not a Lebanese group. They are comprised of the mythical people known as the Palestinians, and the thing that distinguishes the group is that they are Muslims. They were founded by an Islamic cleric. They claim that their attack also on Twitter, yes, Twitter is becoming the terrorist favorite these days, also said it was responsible for a November 19th attack on the Iranian embassy that killed 23 people. They, by the way, did attack the embassy again today, using the same tactic of twin suicide bombs. Yes, nothing says Islam more than suicide. If I were a Muslim, I might want to take my own life. Muhammad never gave Muslims a reason to live, only a reason to die. Hezbollah and its powerful Shiite Muslim political and militant group in Lebanon is funded by Iran. Yes, no question about that. The group has sent hundreds of fighters into neighboring Syria. No, it hasn't sent hundreds. It's sent thousands. But Shiite Muslims, when they wish to be jihadists, they join Hezbollah. You know, the difference really between Shiite Islam and Sunni Islam is that in Sunni Islam there are countless Islamic terrorist clubs. Countless. I mean, there are so many of them that it would be impossible to just chronicle all of their names. I have a, on the Prophet of Doom site, during the days I was maintaining it, I had a an actual list of Islamic terrorist organizations, some of the most noteworthy in the world, and then wrote a history about them. So you can go onto any one of those terrorist organizations, you click on it, tell you who founded it, when they were founded, what state or nation they were most associated with the principal grievance, what they were trying to achieve. All of them want the same thing. They want Sharia law imposed on everyone. They want the entire world to submit to Islam. After a while, it just became wearisome. You know, I mean, wrote articles on all of these groups, hundreds of them, but there are countless numbers of Sunni Islamic terrorist organizations. In Shia Islam, Hezbollah is pretty much it. So it's a very different kind of thing, and Hezbollah is funded entirely by Iran. It's Hezbollah is in essence the special forces, if you will, of the Iranian government. This is a comment by the Sunni terrorist organization that is germane to this region. We will continue through the grace of, and this reads God. They didn't say God, they said Allah. We will continue through the grace of Allah and His strength to target Iran and the party in Lebanon, in parentheses Hezbollah, and all of their security, political, and military centers to achieve our two demands. One, the exit of all fighters from the party of Iran in Syria. Two, the release of our prisoners from oppressive Lebanese prisons. End quote, the statement read. Yes, it's through the grace of Allah that we kill through suicide bombers. It's through the grace of Allah that we target Muslims. Yes, it is through the grace of Allah that Muslims are terrorists. The three-year uprising in Syria, which began as a popular protest but descended into civil war, they're wrong on both accounts. Now, there were some minor, unarmed political protests of Assad. And it was principally because the Sunnis felt like they were being treated as second-class citizens in a country that most of the ruling generals and political leaders were related to Assad and therefore were from Shiite tribes. And it's not so much they were Shiites, it's just that their kin was from the Alawites, which are affiliated with the Shia Muslims. But it was immediately thereafter that Saudi Arabia and Qatar saw their opening and began not only to provide weapons to these peaceful protesters, but also to send tens of thousands of non-Syrian jihadists into the country. And so It is not even a civil war today. It's a proxy war. Very different things. And it's now they say it has been increasingly taken over by Sunni Islamist groups. It's wholly taken over by Sunni Islamist groups. You've got Sunni Islamist groups against the Assad government and Hezbollah. That's what you have. Now, if you can find a good party there, have at it. Otherwise, the smartest thing the world can do is to stop supplying weapons to either side. Some rebel groups have affinities or direct links to al-Qaeda. That's not true. Or militant groups in neighboring countries such as Lebanon and Iraq. Well, that they do have. The Abdallah Azzam brigades have strong links to Lebanon's, they write, Palestinian refugee camps. There's no such thing as a Palestinian, but nonetheless, Islamic refugee camps, as well as connections with the Gulf. Connections with the Gulf means that they are funded by Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. One of its senior military leaders, Mujid bin Mohammed al-Majid, beginning name Majid and the ending name Majid means that he is a mujahideen. He is a holy warrior in Allah's cause. He is, of course, a Saudi national, as were some 70% of the suicide bombers of 9/11. He was arrested by Lebanese authorities last December, and he is said to have died from a kidney failure while in custody. Yes, I'm sure he did. If you pound the kidneys enough, they will fail. Turning to another place in the world as we take our world's tour of terrorism and of anarchy. Suicide bombers are believed to have taken part in a major attack on the northern Nigerian border, a town of Bama, the army has said. The attack comes a day after a presidential spokesman said that the army was winning the war against Islamist militants. Maybe not. Borno State Senator Ahmed Zana told the BBC the attack on Bama had lasted for 5 hours. More than 245 people have been murdered this year alone by Islamists in that one country. Several thousand have lost their lives since Boko Haram began its uprising in 2009. Governor Kashim Setima called for reinforcements and said that the terrorists were better armed and better motivated than security forces. Yes, Boko Haram, the fundamentalist Islamic terrorist group ravaging Nigeria, are better armed and better motivated than security forces. You know why they're better armed? Because the United States, through Qatar, provided an unending sea of weapons to the Libyan jihadists, and those Libyan jihadists are now sharing their weapons, not only with the Islamic terrorist groups roaming the Sinai Peninsula, but with those in the Central African Republic that took control of that country and savaged the Christian population, with Mali, which the French are now in eyeball deep, losing the war against Islamist terrorists there. Throughout Northern and Central Africa, the weapons that the United States supplied to aid and abet the Mujahideen that also killed the American ambassador and three others in Benghazi are turning this region into a living hellhole, to a death camp. They are better armed. And, of course, because they're religious zealots, they're better motivated. This is the truth. A state of emergency was declared in Borno and two neighboring states last year with thousands of extra troops sent to the regions, but attacks have continued. Why? Because you cannot win a war against a religious enemy with bullets and bombs. The BBC, Wills Ross in Nigeria, says that the army has at times taken hours to respond to the attack. Yes, because if you were working in the military, you're underpaid, you're poorly equipped, and you're being sent in to fight zealots, jihadists who think that dying while killing you is not only great sport, but it's the only express ticket into their God's paradise. How are you going to prevail under those circumstances? Thereby allowing the militants to kill, to destroy homes, schools, and mosques, and loot before retreating. That's the nature of Islam. Islamic militants kill. They destroy homes. They destroy schools. They even destroy mosques, and they loot before they retreat. It is how the Quran was written to expressly encourage Islamic terrorism. It is no different than the kind of carnage that was witnessed by Kublai Khan and Genghis Khan, his father. Barbarians, motivated by loot, bloodlust, carnage. But this time, rather than doing it in the name of a general, they're doing it in the name of their wannabe prophet and demonic god. On Saturday alone, 106 people were killed in just one attack in just one village in Nigeria. After meeting President Goodluck Jonathan, Mr. Shettima told the BBC's Hausa service that without reinforcements, it is absolutely impossible for us to beat Boko Haram. Impossible for you to beat them even with reinforcements because you're fighting them the wrong way. It's long past time that the world recognize that there is only one weapon that can be wielded against a religion, and it is deadly to all religions, the truth. Confronted with the truth, religious terrorism, religious wars, religious motivations die. We need to start telling the truth about Islam as opposed to trying to bomb it into submission. Turning to another place that is a living hellhole, Reuters is reporting an Australian man has been arrested while doing missionary work in North Korea. While North Korea, according to this Reuters report, espouses freedom of religion, it is ranked as one of the world's most oppressive regimes in terms of freedom of religion. The United Nations report that was issued yesterday cited a lack of religious freedoms in the state whose human rights abuses are likened by the UN. I'd like to turn to Macedonia. You might wonder, why would I turn to Macedonia? Because this was really a minor terrorist attack, but it will become obvious before too long. Macedonian police reported today that an explosion has wounded five Roma children in a town west of the capital. And investigators, they say they haven't yet identify the type of device, but it appears that the device was a bomb that was then subsequently exploded. That was an unused ordnance from the Macedonian-Albanian Civil War. Now, here in the West, my guess is that the majority of the listeners to this program, whether you be in New Zealand or Australia, whether you be in the UK or in Colombia, South America, as we've had callers from all of those places to this program, as well as from Canada and throughout the United States, my guess is that most of us are not aware of what's going on in Macedonia. But Macedonia is still engaged in a breakaway conflict between the Albanians that represent between a 20 and 25% minority and the rest of the principally Greek population of that country. Now, Macedonia is a fairly new country. It's a really small country, and it's a relatively new country. It was, we'll continue this history lesson through Macedonia, as it relates to this particular catalyst for telling the story. Two 14-year-old girls sustained serious limb and chest injuries in the blast, and they were rushed to a hospital. They say that they are in stable condition after surgery. Three other children were less injured and have now been discharged from the hospital. Albanians are the largest ethnic minority in the Republic of Macedonia. Of the 2 million citizens of Macedonia, 509,000, or 25%, are Albanian, according to the latest national census, which was conducted in 2002. The Albanian minority lives mostly in the northwest part of the country. All right, listeners, what do you think the likelihood is that the Albanians are Muslims? You would be right. Shortly after the defeat of Turkey by the Balkan allies, a conference of ambassadors of the great powers, Britain, Germany, Russia, Austria, Hungary, France, and Italy, convened in London in December of 1912 to settle outstanding issues raised by the conflict. Well, with support given to the Albanians by Austria, Hungary, and Italy, the conference agreed to create an independent state of Albania, which became a reality in 1913. However, the boundaries of the new state were drawn in such a way that large areas with Albanian populations remained outside of this new country of Albania, including the area that would go on to become the Socialist Republic of Macedonia. Now, since the end of World War II, the Socialist Republic of Macedonia's population has grown steadily, with the greatest increases occurring in the ethnic Albanian community. You wonder why? I mean, Muslim men have four wives. They are breeding like rabbits. There's a reason that Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world. It has all to do with the birth rates. And babies have a tendency, whether male or female, as we have shared, to adopt as Yahweh has warned us, the religion and politics of their fathers. From 1953 through the time of the latest census in 2002, the percentage of Albanians living in the Republic of Macedonia has increased by 31%. Very short period of time. In the late 1980s, when autonomy of the province of Kosovo was revoked and the repression of the Albanian population significantly increased, these developments also took place in the Soviet Republic, the Socialist Republic of Macedonia. The Albanian language was removed from public sight. Albanian families were prohibited from naming their children with Albanian names on the grounds that it created divisions. And finally, to lower the significantly higher birth rate of the Muslim Albanian population, Albanian families were prohibited from having more than two children. That didn't work. The main religion among Albanians, of course, according to Wikipedia, in the Republic of Macedonia is Islam, though there are a few who are Roman Catholic. The prominent member of the Agnes Bojihu is known as Mother Teresa. There are also a few Orthodox Christian Albanian villages, but the Orthodox Christian population is now being assimilated and forgotten. They have another word for that. In Iraq, they call it annihilation, where the Christian population has been decimated. Interesting story. We'll continue after a moment. Welcome back to Shattering News. One of the things I forgot to do is to remind our listeners, for those who would like to listen and hopefully even call in, I'll be doing Man Cow's show. Man Cow is broadcast earlier on the GCN network. He's broadcast out of Chicago, syndicated nationally. Man Cow is the fellow who joined his brother in guns something and automobiles, gun Bibles and automobiles, whatever it might be. Gun God and Automobiles, I think, is the name of the show. And I'll be on starting at 7:30 Pacific time, 10:30 Eastern time. Continuing in Macedonia, the New York Times is reporting that, and this is really an interesting short article. But when I finish this article, I think that you'll begin to see why I'm reporting on Macedonia. According to the New York Times, the ambitious retooling of this small nation's identity, Macedonia, a Balkan brand of hyper-patriotism, accompanied by the trumpeting of Macedonians' ancient roots, that would be the empire that was carved out by Alexander the Great, is raising concerns internationally about growing authoritarianism, about dictatorial rule. of silencing all dissent and accusations of abuse of power by the government. The European Commission released its annual report this week on the country's progress toward EU membership and found that the country was adverse to media freedoms and to the rule of law. Then this, the New York Times reports out of Macedonia that, playing up to its past glory, Macedonia erected a 92-foot high, 30-ton bronze statue of Alexander the Great, the warrior on his horse, in the main square of the nation's capital. For those who are following along, you may know that Yahweh told us that a small nation, Macedonia. A young nation, Macedonia. It's just formed out of the disintegration of Yugoslavia. And it is quite small, 2 million population. We'll join with two other nations to launch a dictatorial regime on the world. That regime will be extraordinarily warlike. And it is interesting that the way that this leader is portrayed, and he is called by Christians the Antichrist. He is actually called by Yahweh the Torahless One. That it is immediately evident in reading the prophecy that he is blending Catholic Christianity, Sunni Islam, and socialist secular humanism, which is now still rampant in Macedonia because it began as a communist country, together. And that from the one nation that this man will arise from, which is, if you look at the prophecy, and it talks about out of both the realm of Alexander the Great and of the Roman Empire. And there's only one place that they intersect, and it happens to be in Macedonia. That this nation, this small young nation, will bond with two other small nations, and then form a confederacy of 10 nations as they're trying to integrate into what I think is going to be a southern tier of the European Union. What we're witnessing even there is all of the growth pains that are leading directly to the rise of the world leader that is going to wreak such havoc on our world. With that known, let's turn our attention to the world's most debilitating religion, because it's the world's most prevalent religion, Christianity. This statement from statement number 13 among the edicts of the Seventh-day Adventist reads, "The universal church is composed of all of those who truly believe in Christ." Well, that's true. The fact that Christ is a fantasy, that there is no Christ, that the Christian Christ is based on Dionysus and Bacchus, in turn Osiris, and before that Tammuz and Nimrod, that he is the son of the sun, the dying and resurrecting God of pagan mythology. And it is based, comprised, this Christian church, what it has no affinity whatsoever with Yahweh, is indeed comprised of true believers. It says then that in the last days, the time of widespread apostasy, a remnant will be called out to keep the commandments of God in faith in the faith of Jesus, as in there was a religion of Jesus, the faith of Jesus. Well, first of all, there was no Jesus, so if you don't know his name, you've got no clue who he is or what he did. He did not have faith. To suggest that Yahusha, the diminished corporeal manifestation of Yahweh, had a faith is absolutely ludicrous. His opening statement was, "Do not think that I have come to annul the Torah, to in any way invalidate the Torah. I've come to be the living fulfillment of it." It's just absurd what religion does to people's ability to think. It just turns minds into mush. We talked on the program yesterday, God doesn't have any commandments. What's referred to as the Ten Commandments aren't commandments at all. God does not use the term command anywhere in them. He referred to them as the Ten Statements, the Devarim. A statement and a commandment are very different things. There was only one of the Ten Statements that was written in the imperative mood. You know, in Hebrew, verbs are given a stem which establishes the relationship between the subject and the object of the verb's action. They're given conjugations which determine whether the action is ongoing and habitual or a one-time event. And they are given moods which express volition and tell us who is expressing their desire. Well, there's only one of the Hebrew moods that can be considered a command, and it primarily conveys volition. It's the imperative. And it was used in only one of the Ten Statements. So to say that there are Ten Commandments means that you don't know Hebrew grammar, or don't care, or don't know that the Hebrew word dabar doesn't mean command, but instead means statement, words that comprise the statement. Moreover, the religion of Christianity and the Christian church is in violation of 10 of 10 of these statements, and particularly the first three statements on the first tablet. For God introduces himself by name, and Yahweh says that he himself is the Savior, and there should be no other gods, and that if you cling to another god, as Christians do with their Jesus Christ, that you will cease to exist. He then says in the second statement, don't be religious. Because if you are religious, fathers who are religious will corrupt their sons to the third and fourth generation, and that the only opportunity for his mercy is to closely examine and carefully consider to observe the terms and conditions of his covenant. And the third of those statements, he says that those who negate his name and those who promote deadly and destructive lies in his name, as the Christian church does both of these two things, that they will find themselves without the opportunity of any forgiveness. Yes, the first of those three statements destroy the Seventh-day Adventists, as they do destroy the credibility of all of Christianity. Now, going further, it says that, by the way, it says keep the commandments. There is no Hebrew instruction, not only to keep a commandment, because there are no commandments, but God doesn't use the word keep. He uses three words, really, relative to his word. The most common is shamar. It means to observe. Observe does not mean keep. Observe means to use your eyes to read and to recite the words that Yahweh has made available to us. It's to carefully and closely examine and thoughtfully consider what God has to say. That's what observe means. So he tells us to shamar his testimony. He encourages us to shema his testimony. Shema is a Hebrew word that means to listen. But in your corrupt English translations published by religious institutions, they changed shamar, which means to listen, to obey. There is no connotation whatsoever between shema and obey. Shema simply means to listen. Then God will encourage us after we have listened to what he has to say, after we have closely examined, read, and recited what he has to say and thought about it, that it would be in our interest to act upon it, to engage. He never tells us to keep or to obey. Going on, it says, this remnant announces the arrival of the judgment hour and proclaims salvation through Christ. That's not true either. God does not have a remnant that announces the judgment hour. And God does have a remnant, but the remnant is not Gentiles. The remnant is Israelites and also Yehudim, which are a subset of the Israelites. They are the remnant, not a church, not Gentiles. And they're not announcing the arrival of a judgment hour. No, Yahweh is not coming back to judge. He's coming back to annihilate and to embrace. Those who have chosen a path that is destructive of his land, his people, and his plan, they will be annihilated, instantly vaporized upon his return. not going to be judged. It's simply going to be vaporized, gone. And those who have embraced the covenant and become his children and have reached out to him during the waning days of this horrible tribulation on earth, they will be received by the very God they've come to know and trust. Salvation is only afforded to those who participate in the covenant, and of course Christians never make that connection. It isn't through Christ, it is through Yahweh. They then say that this remnant is heralding the approach of Christ's second advent. Evidently they can't count. Evidently they think that the entirety of God's message is contained in their Christian New Testament. Yahusha has been here six times before. When he returns as Yahweh, as light, it will be his seventh. Story is presented by God. Don't they trust the God who provided the Torah, prophets, and Psalms? Don't they read it? Don't they consider what he had to say? Evidently not. We will return to shatteringness and the unity in the body of Christ, point 14 of this church. Welcome back to Shattering Mist, the 14th edict of the Seventh-day Adventists that get one thing partially right and everything else wrong, is that there is unity in the body of Christ. Now, there are a number of things that are wrong with that statement, even before we read what they have to say about it. This fixation on Christ. There is no one named Christ. God has no association with anyone named Christ. Even if you want to go to Christ being a title, it's a transliteration of a Greek word, and God doesn't speak Greek. God didn't communicate in Greek. None of Yahweh's prophets wrote in Greek. You don't translate a title that is from one language into the other language and then transliterate it out of the borrowed language. You know, that would be like taking Caesar and changing it to Harry, which is what Caesar means in Latin, and then calling each of the emperors in Rome Harry Augustus, for example. Harry Hadrian. Harry Caligula. You know, it is absurd. I mean, we use the term czar because that's the Russian term for the title. So why in the world is this mythical title Christ used as the name for the religion and the name for the founder of this religion, which when he himself was opposed to such a title and vehemently opposed to religion? Moving on to body, there's a fixation on the body, of course, because they have to have bodily resurrection, and they wanted their God to be bodily present with them, and they wanted that body to represent the totality of God, and of course they needed to kill their God for their God to be meaningful as he was in all pagan religions. But the body is irrelevant apart from Passover. It's just like communion in Christianity, and the bread and the wine is irrelevant apart from Passover. And so if you're unable to associate the body with the Passover lamb, then the body is irrelevant, and the body ceased to exist the evening of Passover anyway. So then here's their statement. The church is one body with many members, called from every nation, kindred, tongue, and people. No, the church is not one body, by the way. It's there are hundreds, if not thousands, of collections of Christian cults, Christian denominations, Christian organizations around the world. So there's not one of them. There are tens of thousands, perhaps, would be more accurate. Certainly thousands. There is no unified church that is calling people from every nation, kindred, tongue, and people, but instead multiples of them. Through the revelation of Jesus Christ in the Scriptures, we share the same faith. Actually, no, there is no Jesus Christ. Their scriptures include the Christian New Testament, which wasn't inspired by God, and particularly half of it is Paul's writings, who was a scallywag. Paul was the wolf in sheep's clothing. He was the false apostle and the false prophet. He is the plague of death that Yahweh and Yahusha speak of. And so there is no revelation from Yahusha, his actual name, the Messiah, his actual title, in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, the actually appropriate term, that would call anyone to faith. They are Yahweh's Torah and his prophets are overtly anti-religious. That's the, you know, I know that people want to consider the Bible a religious book, but it's not. Well, the Christian New Testament is, particularly Paul's letters. But the part that Yahweh actually inspired, the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, are not only not religious, they're anti-religious. So it doesn't call people to faith. And if there was one witness to all, then why does the Christian New Testament, Christians, completely contradict the witness that Yahweh provided to all? And you're being complete hypocrites here with the stupidity of this statement. Then its unity has the source in the oneness of the triune God. Equally moronic and pagan. The Trinity is Babylonian. It is not from Yahweh. Well, as we contemplate all of the fallacies that exist in the religion of Christianity and why it isn't worthy of your soul, we will turn when we return to Shattering Myths, to Yahweh's presentation of the covenant.